In the year 2012, the Earth was attacked by an extraterrestrial military force, destroying 98% of all living creatures. 84 years later, humans studied fragments of abandoned alien spacecrafts and gained the ability to travel through time. In order to prevent the devastating attack of 2012, the humans sent back four protectors with a mission to defend the Earth at any cost. Together, these four protectors formed Z-Games, the most powerful force that the Earth has ever known. Now, Z-Games is all that stands between us and the impending invasion. Long live the planet Earth. Long live Z-Games.
You are listening to Zed Games, and we are coming to you live from our secret volcano base, where we are holding video game journalism ransom. There are a number of heroes coming through our complex right now, where they will face us one by one in a level of our choosing. The 50-foot colossus across the desk from me, Mr. Razor, how are you going?
I'm very well, thank you, Lee.
The squid-faced guy from the water level, Jody. That's Jody.
Hi.
That's how he sounds at all times. And I'm piloting some kind of mechanized spider device. You will see me on the robot level.
Excellent.
So, Razor, what are we talking about tonight?
Well,
that was not a non sequitur, was it?
The big thing that we're talking about tonight is that we're going to be unveiling the winners of last week's Radiothon competition. We had plenty of prizes to give away, and if you entered, stay tuned, because we could be calling your name out and giving you awesome gaming prizes. Yeah, it's going to be great. But Lee, you're going to be talking about Darksiders 2.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, that's, finding out all about that later.
That's going to be good.
I've been playing Sound Shapes, which is a nifty little platformer for the PS Vita. And at the end of the episode, we're going to be talking about our favorite boss fights of all time.
Yes, I wasn't just crazy at the start of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to kick this episode off, let's hear some news. Major Lee, if you please.
Very good. Oh, nice. So Major League Gaming, an American esports organizer, has disqualified the top two teams from its League of Legends Summer Championship. MLG disqualified the teams for collusion and claimed that they had an agreement to split the prize money. So that is super exciting. Who knew that esports could be fixed?
Yeah, right? Do they like take a dive in the third round?
Yeah, they must.
Awesome.
they all alt F4 at the last minute.
Man.
Yeah. So it's a real sport now.
Yeah. Leviathan, a single player DLC pack for the blockbuster action space opera Mass Effect 3, comes out this week for the PS3, 360, and PC. And it's a great big underwater level, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the first single-player DLC, is it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, the last one was just a multiplayer-only thing.
There was one that added a new NPC and a few missions where you had to collect that NPC.
Was there?
Yeah, right at the start.
It came with the collector's edition. That was the built-in one, yeah.
Yeah, it added... you could buy it as DLC if you didn't get the pre-order fancy pack.
Yes.
The PS Vita has this week received a firmware update, version 1.8. of the firmware for Sony's latest handheld provides button functionality for web browsing, support for PS1 classics, and several minor functionality improvements. PS1 classic titles will appear on the PSN store for the Vita later this week.
Razor, have you downloaded that for your Vita yet?
The firmware update, yeah.
Yes?
It's pretty cool. With the browser, you can actually like scroll up and down using the back touchpad, which is cool because, you know, when you're touching with your hands, it gets all smeared and gross.
Yeah.
And you also, like, some of the text is obscured, so this is kind of cool. And
your screen is terrible, Ray.
Yeah, it's really dirty.
There's gravy on that.
What PS1 games are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to playing the original Metal Gear Solid again. That was probably one of my favorite ever PS1 games. And I don't know how well it's aged, but I'm looking forward to, you know, taking a nostalgia trip. But also the Final Fantasy games, of course. I mean, they were terrific. 6 through to 9 will be available, hopefully this week.
Great.
Yeah.
So World of Warcraft has received a content patch in anticipation of the upcoming Mists of Pandaria expansion. Razor, do you remember any of the details of this one? I saw you looking at the email.
I don't remember exactly.
Is this the one that's going to allow everyone to be able to play as a panda?
No, that's in the actual expansion. This is sort of like in anticipation. They're tweaking a few things.
Yeah, but when that comes out, though, they're going to remove all class and race content restrictions so that even if you don't have Mists of Pandaria, you will still be able to play as a Pandaren.
Oh, that is a good move because, you know, that annoyed me in the character creation screen. Yeah, you know, like having races being fixed to certain classes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was poor form.
Yes.
Yeah.
In more massively multiplayer online news, the highly anticipated MMO Guild Wars 2 was released this week for PC.
Hopefully we will have something to say about that next week, if I can fit it into my busy schedule.
You got your greasy little mitts on a copy of that, didn't you?
That I did. They were greasy mitts because I was touching your PS Vita just before I purchased it.
Now, a new DLC has been announced for last year's smash hit Skyrim. Of course, we just had one earlier this year. Hearthfire will be centered around home and property customization. It will also grant the ability to raise children. The expansion will be available on the 360 for September the 6th.
I know you've been looking forward to having children in Skyrim, Razor.
Have I?
Yes.
Oh.
I've seen your mournful posts on Facebook and on the Twitter feed.
Yeah. I mean, it could be an interesting little thing.
Yeah.
Let you build your own house. Thing. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. You can actually, like, fortify it and build traps.
Yeah, and then you have, like, waves of enemies attack you when you get to, you know, have little sieges.
Unleash your minions, your children.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's what children are for.
Yeah. Yes. Defending your property.
Mm-hmm. So 360 owners, again, are lucky and will be receiving this one in only a week's time, but for the rest of us PC and PS3 owners, probably, you know, about a month or 6 weeks wait on that.
Fingers crossed. So now we're into the unsubstantiated rumor corner. This is exciting. I haven't read it yet, but I'll sound like I'm engaged in some kind of conspiracy as I read it out. So the release date for the Wii U may have been accidentally leaked. Accessory manufacturer PDP gave the date of November 18th while making a presentation at the GameSpot Managers Conference. Nintendo are holding a press conference on the 13th of September in New York City, where the release date and price are expected to be officially announced.
All right. Well, that's a totally unsubstantiated rumor.
Yeah, don't hold that against us.
We don't know. But a lot of people are looking forward to the Wii U. It's going to be, hopefully, a big holiday smash hit for this Christmas. Might be one of those, you know, must-have items. Kind of like that toy from that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Jingle All the Way.
Why do you reference that every episode of the show, Razor?
Because it's like in my top three movies of all time. After Junior and and End of Days. Yeah.
Go to a track.
You're listening to Zed Games, Razor, Lee and Jody with you. Now, the next game I'm going to talk about, Sound Shapes, is for the PS Vita. It's the PS Vita, of course, is Sony's latest entry into the handheld market. A couple of months ago, I offered you my opinions on the device. I said that if you're thinking about getting one, maybe it's a good idea to wait because the lineup isn't terribly exciting. And while there's a few things coming out later this year, it's not the best time. But now I'd like to offer my revised opinion.
Yep.
There's been a couple of weeks ago, there was a Gamescom conference held in Cologne, Germany, where Sony took the opportunity to hype up the Vita, something they should have done at E3 in June. But they offered a few nice little enticing tidbits that would really made a few Vita owners happy. Firstly, they announced a new IP coming to the Vita this year, called Tearaway. It's by Media Molecules, who did Little Big Planet, of course, and it's their first original property since Little Big Planet, and it's going to be a Vita exclusive, and it looks really nice. It's about like a world that's made out of paper, and the messenger in the game, he's a messenger, and he's got a message for you, the player, and you have to help him like get it to you. And to do that,
I hope it's a message of peace and love.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
But we'll see. But
fingers crossed.
The cool thing is that it sort of uses like a lot of the Vita's input functionality really well. Like the rear touchpad, when you poke the back of it, your finger appears on the screen as though it punched through the paper.
Oh, right. Nice.
And you can sort of manipulate the objects in the world that way. And it just looked like a really clever use of the system. So that got a lot of people like worked up. And another cool thing they announced was the cross-buy, which is where you buy the game for the Vita or PS3, certain games only, and you get the other game for the system, the equivalent game for the other system, free. Starting with Sound Shapes, which I'll be talking about later on, very shortly. So you buy that game, and then you can just download the game for the PS3 for free. And that's going to be happening for the PS Battle Royale All-Stars.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Ratchet and Clank, the new game that's coming out, and also Sly Cooper, Thieves in Time.
Also a few of them.
Yeah,
and that's really cool. I mean, that's just a nice little bonus for people that have PS3s and Vitas. I thought that was a nice touch. And another thing, with the firmware update that just came out this week, there's a cool little cross-play thing where you can use your PS Vita as like an advanced PS3 controller for certain games, and they demoed the use of that for the Little Big Planet that's coming out later on. Little Big Planet 2, I think. That was already released, I'm not sure. Like, there's a Little Big Planet that's coming out for Vita as well. And then there's one that's for the PS3. But anyway, that was really cool. But, yeah, I'd like to talk now about Sound Shapes.
Tell us about the game, Ray.
Yeah. Well, it's a platform game, and there's no real backstory or clever little... I don't know. You don't know what's happening, really. It's just like a left-to-right platformer, right? And you're like a little dot. You're a little sticky ball. And the aim of the game is to just get from left to right. But what is innovative about this game is how it uses music. You have to collect notes as you go through the levels, and each note sort of adds a piece to the musical composition. And also some like obstacles and some enemies and stuff emit musical notes as well. So it's kind of like a weird hybrid of a platformer and a music game. I guess the best way to describe it would be like, sort of if a song was having a dream, it would be like this. But let's hear some of the music from Sound Shapes. So Sound Shapes is like a collaboration between the guy from Queasy Games, who did the Everyday Shooter game, which is a cool little music rhythm shooter game, and an indie musician from a band called I Am Robot. And it's really cool. And that song was actually from one of the songs that's based on Beck's music. He contributed 3 songs to the soundtrack. And those songs in particular are really awesome. There's also music by Deadmau5 and a few other indie musicians. Really cool. Recommend it wholeheartedly. It's $19.95 from the PSN store.
So as you're playing, just sort of bouncing around the world, most of the things you do create music,
yeah,
or at least play musical notes. So if I played it for 20 seconds and it was terrible, but if you're playing it well enough, does it sound like good music?
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of interesting because the music starts like you pick up a note which is represented by a small blob in the world, and then the loop or the sound that it's associated to sort of plays. And then each screen is sort of like a bar or a riff, and you have to get all the notes from that screen to create sort of that musical loop.
Yeah.
And that just keeps playing and playing until you go to the next screen. And some of the notes, I think the notes linger for 3 screens. So,
It builds and builds,
and then some of them fade away, and it's not really strictly a song, but it's very musically based.
Is it... If you are uncoordinated, perhaps, or are completely without rhythm, does it punish you by becoming cacophonous, or does it just allow the
Yeah, it's not a rhythm game in the traditional sense, like the Reflex sort of thing. But if you pay attention to the music, there are certain clues within the music that will assist you. Like there might be a laser beam that only strikes with the bass drum.
Yep.
So, you know, listening to the bass drum will help you predict when the laser pops out so you can avoid it.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
The only downside is that the campaign is quite short. There's the levels are divided into albums, which are about 3 or 4 levels each, and each sort of one has a specific theme, an art theme, and a musical style as well. And there's only probably maybe 20 levels for the whole thing, so it's a bit short. But on the plus side, there's an excellent level editor. So if you're like a creative type, you can go in there, and it's a really intuitive and easy to use level creation system, especially on the Vita, where you can use the touch screen and just like touch where you want stuff to go. And you can also like tap with the beat to like set certain things up in time with the music. And there's a huge community out there of people that are making levels, and I've even uploaded 3 levels myself. So if you want like levels to play, there's hundreds and maybe even thousands out there right now. And making levels is actually really cool and really a really rewarding experience in itself.
Right. What would you rate it out of 7,500 then, Ray?
7,500?
Yes.
I didn't know we rated games on the show.
Well, it's an arbitrary
number. But I'd give it a really high score of like 6,900.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's really cool because the community involvement is what's going to make or break this game, and there's already a whole bunch of people doing stuff for it. Now, Lee, you've been playing a sweet action game
yes.
in the last week. Tell us about it.
Yes, I have been playing Darksiders 2 since it was released last week or the week before that. Maybe the week before that. It is the sequel to Darksiders 1, which is a surprise. Both games by Vigil Software. And they Vigil is a company which was founded by 90s superhero comic book superstar Joe Madureira. Also known as Joe Mad, who was an X-Men artist when he was like 21 or something. And he has this distinctive manga-esque chunky super style.
Yeah, really cool style. I remember looking at his comics and going, wow, that's cool art.
Yeah, you do seem like the sort who'd be into that.
Yeah, he draws beautiful women.
Moving on. So he may lack nuance, but it's certainly an art style that is quite suitable to video games, and these are very, very pretty games. Now, I'm going to be primarily talking about Darksiders 2 because that just came out, but it's inevitable that Darksiders 1 is going to come up as well because the way that they've constructed this sequel is very interesting. Darksiders 2 is set concurrent with the events of Darksiders 1. So you play as the Horseman of the Apocalypse, Death. Once again, not so much in the way of nuance, but there's some bombast there, which is quite exciting. So, Horseman of the Apocalypse, Death, you are seeking to clear your brother War's name, who has somehow accidentally started the end times and accidentally caused the snuffing out of the human race.
Whoops.
Yeah, I know. Like he slipped, you know, he wasn't paying attention, and then, oh, there they go.
I hate when that happens.
I know, right? Just dust-covered cities full of monsters from now on. So Death is a grim-looking fellow, slender chap, pale skin, mask, long, black, gross-looking, you know, 90s metal hair, no shirt.
And he does look very metal.
He's very, very metal.
He looks like a Guar fan.
Yeah, he certainly does. Yeah. No, he looks like he probably is Guar's manager at the very least, you know, or secretly all of their dad. But he, yes, Death is entirely covered in skulls. If it's not covered in skulls, it's probably covered in, like, stitches or, you know, metal studs or just bits of flapping leather. Mm-hmm. He's a sweet-looking dude, but he's also a nimble fellow, and the game requires a lot of riding of his horse, his putrid-looking horse, around vast landscapes and then leaping from platform to platform and then whipping out his twin scythes for some demon-slicing action. It is, as you may have picked up, quite a ridiculous game. But you know what? After the last year of extremely serious games that have been taking themselves far, far too seriously, I was really, really in the mood for massive, impossible landscapes and giant dungeons full of incredible colossi that I have to scale up the side of in order to slash them to pieces with my mega sword. So this was really just, you know, it was fresh for me. What really drew it to my attention, though, was the art style, which is just so, so suitable for this type of gameplay, and has been taken to just a wonderfully painterly extreme. The texture work is just really, really beautiful, and everything, all of the elements of the game seem really well constructed by artists and artisans rather than just put down by people who knew that they were going to fill this place with monsters. So you'll be traversing these magnificent landscapes with your crazy looking skull face dude who also has a magical revolver. I forgot to mention that.
You forgot to mention that?
I forgot to mention that.
Two scythes wasn't enough.
Yeah, two scythes and a magical revolver. Pretty much every element that I will mention will be ridiculous like that. like everything. Just, you know, the first thing you do is you fight the king of crows who transforms into an illusion of your brother so that you can prove that you might have the guts to kill him if you have to. He then explodes and curses you with the souls of a dead race of half demon, half angels.
I don't know if it sounds more like a heavy metal concept album that probably comes in a trilogy or an awesome episode of Adventure Time.
It's the perfect combination of both, actually. Because,
sweet.
Yeah, it has the emotional maturity of of probably both of those things, actually. It's interesting because every single element about this game is ludicrous, but then lovingly crafted by someone who had a lot of time on their hands. So as ridiculous as every character is that you encounter, they look amazing. They've got a really wonderful piece of voice acting behind them, and everyone animates in a really lively fashion. It's a game that just, it looks the way that you want all video games to look. You know, there's an aesthetic that carries over across every element, and it's just really tightly brought together. So that's, you know, that's sitting down and looking at it. Playing it is also very interesting because it plays like, you know, every great adventure game that came out in the last decade. It's stealing wholesale from, you know, God of War and from the recent Prince of Persia games, and in particular from the Legend of Zelda structure, where you'll enter a dungeon. The dungeon will, you know, require that you gain a new piece of equipment that will change the way that you move or interact with the environment. Over the course of that dungeon, you'll master that. Suddenly there'll be a boss, and the only way to defeat the boss is to really, you know, have learnt everything, you know, and taken on board all of the lessons that you've picked up along the way. So it's quite well designed like that. You never really feel like, you know, you don't tend to get too lost, and all of the puzzle elements to the dungeons that you're traversing are well put together. It still feels like it's a production by a team that's still learning how to really convey a lot of information. So there will be times where you'll get a little bit confused because, you know, you don't realize that the claw marks along the wall indicate that that's where you can, you know, sort of slide along with your wicked bone hand from one platform to the other. But eventually you start to get a feel for how these things are put together. So it's a lot of fun. It's a ludicrous game from start to finish, where every time you enter a room, a new giant will emerge from the floor and try to smash you. But you should have the tools at your disposal to defeat them.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Now, this game is out for all systems, that is PS3, 360, and the PC.
Yes.
What are you playing it on?
I am playing it on the PC. Where if you're going to be playing it there, you will get a smoother version than you get on the other consoles. It's not been particularly well optimized for the PC as far as ports go. You don't have any real graphical options and you need to be playing it with a controller. But, you know, if you go into it with that in mind, you will probably get the best experience because it's a bit buggy apparently on the consoles and it has a couple of slowdown issues. They are saying that they're going to fix that. But Darksiders 2 is just ridiculous amounts of fun and it's very, very pretty and you probably won't be disappointed if you're, you know, you're looking for a video game that is all about, you know, smashing up giant things and seeing ridiculous stuff happen in front of you.
Cool. So what's your score out of 7,500?
My score out of 7,500 is probably pi.
That's pretty low.
Well, maybe.
That's like 3 out of 7,500.
That is true. if we're talking about the mathematical figure, but I'm talking about the delicious treat.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. You're listening to Zed Games. That was a track called Ultimate Battle from the Plants vs. Zombies soundtrack. Jody, you chose that one?
Yeah, I love Plants vs. Zombies so much, and I'm looking forward to the second one, which might be coming out next year. I haven't said for sure.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah, I love that game. But now we're going to be talking about our favorite boss battles.
Are you going to be talking like that through the entire thing?
Yes.
Good. Okay.
We'll be over here memorizing your attack pattern, finding your weak spot, hitting it 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, boss battles, they're like the foundation of a lot of video games. I mean, Donkey Kong, for example, considered to be like one of the first good video games, was pretty much a whole big boss fight.
Yep.
Just Mario versus Donkey Kong. And games, you know, up until Darksiders, games that are being released this week, still have the same sort of trash and then the boss sort of mechanic that goes through and running throughout the games.
Who is the final boss of Darksiders 2? Someone suitably epic?
I have no idea because I'm still working my way through all of his, like, janitors and cleaning staff and admin offices at the moment. But I can only assume that it is probably all of the planets in the galaxy combined into some colossal demon beast that spews probably the human race at you out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what are the best of all time? Jody, what do you think?
I am not a huge fan of boss fights in general. I often find them the tedious parts of games that stop me from progressing further. I've never finished a Zelda game, ever, because I always get bored of the boss fights. And even in games that I have enjoyed and finished, like Arkham Asylum, I did get really frustrated by some of those boss fights. But there is one boss fight, and it's the one at the end of Wolfenstein, that I think is probably unbeatable. It's because the final boss of Wolfenstein is Hitler. And you can't go wrong minigunning Hitler into bits.
Have you
really
just Godwin's lord this entire conversation?
Yeah, I have.
You have? Yeah. Thanks. Now everything we say will just seem facetious in response.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Jody.
You're welcome.
That's good.
Yeah, no, I do remember killing Hitler with God mode turned on, of course.
Cheap.
I was 12 years old, and I probably shouldn't have even been playing that game.
Yeah.
But I turned on God mode. Everyone knows the cheat. Just to see what happens when you kill Hitler. And, yeah, it was really cool.
He
just
does
melts.
Get reduced to some pretty gory globs of meat.
Yeah, amazing.
Which is satisfying.
Yeah. And historically accurate as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm not sure about the historical accuracy of the Hitler wizards who throw fireballs at you before you get to the final version of Hitler who fights you in his mechanized armor with miniguns for arms.
No, that really happened.
Oh, cool.
All of that. Mm. Yeah. It's very accurate. Yep.
My favorite of all time, well, I don't know, the one that sort of that really became a part of me was Achilleos, who is the final boss in Rift.
Yeah.
The MMO, because I played Rift for a good 8 months, pretty solidly, and I joined a guild, like a hardcore raiding guild, and we were stuck on Achilleos for a number of months, and just every single mechanic of that fight just got drilled into my brain. I'm talking about Achilleos pre-nerf.
Okay. Everyone make note of that.
Yeah.
Because you just had a bunch of guys...
Glad you settled that for us.
All of our listeners just hopped on Twitter right now. It's like, Achilleos? What is this guy talking
about? Like in November. In, like, in November last year. I mean, you'll know what I mean if you play Rift. But yeah, I mean, it was hardcore. Basically, there's 20 people. Everyone has to perform exactly right. Otherwise, you know, one person screws up, you got to start the whole thing again. And everyone has to do everything perfect and hit all the limits, hit all the marks in about a 25-minute fight. And that's 20 people in coordination. So it was hard. And we did it so many times for so many weeks. And the one night that I decided not to come to raid, they beat it. So
crush.
It was brutal, man.
So you don't have an actual anecdote about beating that guy?
No, but every single mechanic I know. Yeah.
But that's fine, though, because we were just Godwin's Lord anyway. So like, what can we do?
Yeah, how about you, Lee?
Well, I'm interested in Jody's opinion there, because I used to be one of those guys who hated the boss fights as well. I used to be terrible at video games too, Jody. There's no shame in that.
And then you grew as a person.
That's right.
And now you're better than me.
Yeah, Yeah. That's. I didn't want to actually say it out loud, but I'm glad that you put it out there into the air. That did go out, right, Ray?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That was broadcast. Anyway, it was probably not until very recently when I realized the actual value of the boss fight. And it was probably a Zelda game that made me realize what these things are meant to be for and how they can be fun. I don't really care about getting into a fight with some, big thing with 10 million hit points that's just a tedious slog to get through. But what I like about the Zelda games is that there are recognizable mechanics there, and you don't have to be particularly dexterous, but you have to be clever enough to recognize what you're doing and have that innate timing to be able to get past them. And the sense of achievement there is, I think, is quite profound. And I've since gone on to really enjoy a lot of games that some people consider to be, all about just the boss fights, like No More Heroes, for example, which was a Grasshopper Games release on the Wii and now other consoles, is actually incredibly frustrating until the boss fights, which are all amazing. It's a very weird game in and of itself, because you play a Japanese fanboy who wins a lightsaber on eBay and then decides to become the world's greatest assassin. And each of the assassins that you fight have their own interesting personality and visual design, and this really, really great mechanic that will be tied into them. So probably the one that I enjoyed the most was Destroy Man, who was a guy who was just a postman who was obsessed with a TV superhero and dressed as him, and then had this huge superhero costume that fired terrifying beams from the crotch and had machine guns that fired out of his nipples and stuff. And everything that he did to you, he would scream destroy beforehand. And so playing through those, and then maybe the God of War games as well, where...
Oh yeah, God of War, so many memorable fights. Yeah. I love how every game just starts off with you trying to kill the biggest humanoid in the entire universe.
Yeah, well, I mean, you think about like the Colossus of Rhodes fight from God of War 2, where you start that game off being menaced by the Colossus of Rhodes after you've had your godhood stripped of you, and he'll be throwing you around the level. You'll be like fighting your way around this sort of cityscape, and then occasionally he'll just punch his way in into the fight that you're in the middle of, and you have to then take on this giant golden man as well. Yeah. Until eventually you fling yourself onto his face from a ballista and start hacking up his head and like pulling his eyeball out and stuff like that. That is really very satisfying.
Yeah, I love how it also inverted the classic formula of you go through the level and then you hit the boss.
Yeah,
and then you beat the boss. I love how it just, at the very start of the game, you push start and you're just fighting a huge boss. Yeah. And there's nothing you can do about it. That was awesome.
Yeah. So I really like well-designed boss fights. I think the Colossus of Rhodes one is a particularly good example. I've encountered a couple of neat ones in Darksiders 2 already. Just giant things. There was an enormous beetle that had a neat charge pattern thing where I had to, wait till he crashed into the wall and then was disoriented, and then I had to push a rock onto him and that knocked him onto his side, and then you go up and attack him. So, you do eventually get used to these recurring motifs as far as boss fights, but this one was fun. The timing worked. It was a really interesting looking guy, and it was really, really gruesome and graphic when I finally defeated him. So take that, giant beetle guy.
Okay, we put the call out for you guys, the listeners, to tell us your favorite boss fights. We've got a few replies. Nicholas gave us a whole bunch, including the Avatar from Dungeon Keeper, Al Akia from WoW Cataclysm.
Ah.
Did you ever fight that guy, Lee?
No, I never got further into Cataclysm.
And the Butcher from the original Diablo.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
You guys remember that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Say the line, Ray.
Fresh meat. I love that. Liam said all the boss fights from Mischief Makers were fantastic. Chris, who earlier won a prize, said the Colossus of Rhodes. He agrees with you, Lee.
Yeah.
From the God of War 2. So yeah, thanks guys for your comments. Jody, is there any other boss fights that you want to mention before we go?
The final boss of Silent Hill 3 is impressive, not because of the fight's particularly impressive, but because the final boss is called God. And so if you do that in the new HD version, you get an achievement that says you have killed God.
Oh. Nice.
You can't really get any bigger than that, taking down God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's got to be the boss to end all bosses.
I don't know, Hitler's still pretty good.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
God again.
We might just, in case you just joined us and you're waiting to hear if you won a Radiothon prize or not, we read them out earlier, but we might just quickly recap in case you've just joined us.
Sure thing. The Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 for Xbox 360 was won by Lindy. Call of Duty for the PS3 was won by Chris. The Sims 3 pack with a couple of the bonus stuff CDs was won by Susanna. Crysis 2 was won by Thalia. The Silent Hill Downpour poster, plus the Mafia 2 merch pack, plus the Heroes Call pack, was all won by Manny. And the Pokemon Black and White pack, plus a copy of FIFA 2012, was won by Jessica.
Congratulations, and we'll be in touch to tell you how to get your stuff. But this has been Zed Games. Thank you very much for listening. We're going to leave you now with a track called End of Small Sanctuary. Jody.
This is by Akira Yamaoka, and it's from the end of Silent Hill 3.